Gerald Chavis is a name familiar to local jazz aficionados. His trumpet is on display in the Delaware History Museum, but he still performs regularly in the area and leads the Wilmington Youth Jazz Band. And like Clifford Brown and so many other legendary jazz musicians, his jazz journey traces back to Boise Lowry.
When I was home from college, I discovered Robert Boise Lowry, and that changed my life.
The discovery came in the 1970s when Chavis was in his early 20s and playing in an R&B band with Lowry's nephew, Sean Kuntz, who recommended he meet Lowry.
One day after a gig, or one night, he said, "You need to go talk to my uncle." And I said, "Who's your uncle?" And he said, "Boise." And that was it. Within the first lesson, I knew I had to get more.
What hooked him was Lowry's unique approach to teaching music.
He got in my brain, started making me think about things that I hadn't thought about, or rethinking things I had thought about.
Chavis began visiting Lowry at least 4 or 5 times a week, sometimes for a private lesson, but other times just to observe how he worked with others.
With other teachers, once I could play the notes in the right places, we would move on to something else. With Boise, he'd say, "Now how," after I got the notes in the right places, he'd say, "Now how is that supposed to sound?" Of course, I didn't know, and he would just smile and tell me to keep practicing. He never gave you the answers to anything, but he would ask open-ended questions. The answer would be different for different individuals, so you would have to answer it for yourself.
He used what was called the Lowry system, also called the method.
1, 6, 4, 2, 3, 5, 1, 3, 6, 2, 5, 1. 1 to 6, 4 to 2, 3 to 5 to 1.
That's Maurice Sims, who also studied with Boise Lowry and was a friend of Clifford Brown's. In the 1950s, Sims became one of the first black radio hosts in the U.S. and spun Brown's first commercial record. But Sims says it wasn't Clifford Brown who put Wilmington on the map when it came to jazz.
He never approached Boise's ear, Boise's ability. He just learned what Boise taught him.
Lowry was born in 1914 in North Carolina and grew up in a musical family that Sims says was full of geniuses. Boise studied music with his father, who was a band leader, as well as his brother Bud, who played clarinet and saxophone. Lowry's first instrument was the trumpet, and he played in a band with his brother called the Deuces of Rhythm. Lowry eventually settled in Wilmington in the 1940s. Sims says he was tired of playing all night in Philadelphia jazz clubs and not getting paid the same night, unlike in Wilmington.
Get paid every night from the bar for the bar close, you got your money, and you drink a little like that. And by law, the bar had to be closed at 12.
Lowry had another good reason for not wanting to play into the wee hours of the morning. For over 50 years, he was busy teaching jazz lessons, some of which took place after the bars had closed. And he became world-renowned. Chavis again.
Some of this, you know, the world's brightest and best, when they came to Wilmington, would make it a point to go visit Boise and introduce themselves, like Wynton Marsalis and Valerie Ponomarev, Hugh Masekela, Donald Byrd, just, you know, tons of musicians. Those are just the trumpet players.
Chavis says Lowry taught lessons for many years at the Christina Cultural Arts Center.
At Christina, there may be 10 musicians in the room, all different ages and all working on different things. And it would be one big room. It would sound like total chaos. And he would be listening to each of us. You know, and as we're practicing, like I would be facing one corner and somebody else is facing another corner and this guy's on the piano and he would be listening and he'll holler out across the room, give that quarter note its full value or something like that. You know, like he would be listening even if he was working with somebody else. He would, you know, things would catch his ear.
Later in life, he taught primarily out of his home on Broome Street that Chavis and others considered a safe house. His basement was set up to accommodate a band, and while Boise focused on the music, his wife focused on everything else.
We all called her Mom. You know, she was the mother hen, took us aside and would tell us things that we need to know. Because we were all young musicians and wild and crazy. So, you know, it could be anything from clothes that didn't match to to needing to comb your hair, you know?
Music was a way of life for the Lowry family, and Boise's approach was contagious. Among those he attracted was local trumpet player Tony Smith. Smith was a year younger than Gerald Chavis, and like him, started practicing with Lowry while home from college.
When I came back and heard Gerald Chavis, he was playing all over the horn, and I said, uh-oh. I said, I bet he's with Boise, and he was. And so I said, I'm going to Boise.
Smith credits Lowry with really helping him form his own musical style.
Mr. Boise always wanted us to be able to play and have our own style. So he would always tell me, he said, I don't want you sounding like Clifford Brown. And he said, I used to tell Clifford when he was younger, I didn't want him sounding like Dizzy Gillespie. So me and Mr. Boise used to have a lot of arguments about how am I going to get some kind of style when all these people have been playing this music long before me. One of Clifford Brown's close friends, he passed away recently. He came to hear me play somewhere, and he said, you know, Tony, years ago I thought you sounded like Clifford, and then I thought you sounded like Freddie Hubbard, and then I thought you sounded like somebody else, or this and that. He said, I finally figured out who you sound like. I said, well, who do I sound like? He said, you sound like Tony Smith. That's a big compliment.
But both Smith and Chavis say Lowry also had a way of focusing on their and others' weaknesses and making sure the musicians he taught didn't let their heads get too big. Chavis again.
I had some education in theory, and being a 20-something, I thought I knew it all. So his way of putting me in check was, if you knew, he said to me one day, if you really knew all that stuff you're talking about, I would hear it coming out of your horn, but I don't hear anything. Ooh. He was right.
Smith recalled a time Lowry asked him to play for a guest, Russian trumpet player Valery Ponomarev.
So I went and played, and I was doing pretty well, you know, and this and that. So I looked, and Mr. Boise was behind a chalkboard after I finished, and he had a handkerchief, and he was wiping his face, and I said, he must be crying, you know. And he said, Tony, you did everything right today. I said, really? He said, yeah. He said, but I want you to, and he's wiping his eyes, I want you to come over to the house this evening. I need to talk to you. So I told my wife or my girlfriend back then. I said, oh, yeah, he's going to finally tell me I'm doing pretty well. I'll rush over there. And he sat me down and tore me a new behind. You know, I thought I was going to give me some praise, and I jumped up out of there, so I ain't never coming back here no more.
But he did go back, even after Lowry's wife had expressed concern.
She said, well, how you know he's coming back, Boise? Because he wants this. Because he wants it. He'll be back. And sure enough, I was right back.
Despite his sometimes harsh approach, Chavis says Lowry was unassuming and soft-spoken, as well as a deep thinker. Chavis said his music lessons would often incorporate real-world wisdom and advice.
Yeah, I was at the time, you know, thinking everything had to be original. I was reluctant to play anything someone else played, like, you know, excerpts. So he would say something like, you don't own anything. If you love something, that's great, but you don't own it. So that person didn't own it. If you play the same thing they played, you're not going to own it. Somebody else, you know, but you might like something, you know, like a certain thing to do or love a certain thing to do, but you don't own that. When you meet somebody and you fall in love, you don't own them.
Chavis visited Lowry frequently up until his death in 1996.
First thing he says, where's your horn, you know? And he would just start teaching.
He recalled a visit just a few months before he passed away.
His wife had instructed all of us. We were all like her kids, you know, their kids. We were over there all the time, all the musicians around here. And she said, whatever you do, don't get him excited or play his horn. Don't let him play his horn. So you know, went by and you know, she gave me the eye, right? Like, you know what the deal is. And she left us alone. And as soon as she went out the room, Boise said, go get my horn. And he said he wanted me to play augmenteds. And he said something like this. And he could hardly put the horn to his lips. But as soon as he started blowing, it was like he was 20 years old again.
Even then, he still gave Chavis advice.
And the last thing he told me was that he wanted me to play more augmented chords. He wanted to hear that sound in my soloing more. And he was absolutely right. I wasn't using augmenteds at all.
Now, Chavis and Smith look forward to honoring their revered teacher each year during Wilmington's Clifford Brown Jazz Festival. They play together in a tribute band. And they were also recently together to celebrate the life of colleague Vernon James, known as Buddha, who died of pancreatic cancer. He was also another student of Boise's.
Everybody, who was everybody in the music, came.
Maurice Sims again.
And they made all of us stand up on this stage to show you how many people Boise had taught.
Smith says Boise's spirit still alive and well.
He always told us that he was going to live forever through the music that we're playing, you know, and that's true.
For Delaware Public Media, I'm Megan Pauley.